7 days, 7 ordeals. Now you all know that we here are supposed to be interested in matters, metaphysical, matters spiritual, matters self-developmental, and so on. And there is a natural order of development possible for a human being. And it is said in the fairy tale there are 7 veils on absolute awareness. You all know these veils, you've experienced them, but now we're going to take them one by one. We put them on our digits. The little finger is the physical material veil, the veil of matter. And we're going to say about this one, it's tremendously important to recognize that most of us are deeply materialistic, energy centers. I'm looking at you, Peter. Are we not naturally tending to guard our physical body? And to this degree, we are materialistic. Now, the biggest error we can possibly commit is to believe that matter is valid in the sense of the 19th century atomists, who believed there was an irreducible material particle called the atom. That the atom was not energy, but simply an existential particle with no dynamic, no kinetic of its own. Now, have you thought carefully about the meaning of that? Do you believe that matter is matter? In the sense of an irreducible, non-energic, somewhat?
No.
No? Right. Now, if we do believe that matter is matter in that naive, atomistic sense, we're in the greatest conceivable danger. Because if we believe that, we must protect everything in the material world, beginning with our body, focusing particularly on our bones as the most obviously stable of all. Also, if we believe that there is a matter in this irreducible sense, we deprive ourselves of the possibility of miracle. Now, when you think carefully about that, if there is inert matter, if there is a matter which is irreducible, then it cannot be influenced by mind, by will, by consciousness, by feeling. It would simply be what it is, unalterably. So if we believe in matter in that naive sense, we cannot believe in psychosomatic disease. We cannot believe in an energic destiny. We can only believe in an accidental, fortuitous banging together of these ultimate material particles. And luckily for us in our century, that atom has been blown to pieces and proved beyond doubt to be energy. E equals mc squared. We are concerned because if matter in the naive sense is unreal, if it's a figment of careless perception, then miracle is possible, psychosomatics is a reality, and we can actually interfere with our own processes precisely because they are not inert matter. Now, if they're not inert matter, and we know this, then we take off the first veil. The first veil is the material concept that there is an irreducible material particle which veils whatever else there may be. So when you look at yourself as a child, if you remember that far back, it's difficult for me now. Looking back, don't you remember when energy ruled you? Not matter. When you jumped and fell over like a lamb in the spring. When you were driven by energy to do all kind of mad things. Climb a tree you couldn't climb, break a leg, and so on. And in those days, you were thoroughly you. You were living in a dynamic, kinetic way, not determined by matter, even to the point of fracturing your skull and not caring about it. Like one little boy I know who broke a leg not very long ago and found it made him the centre of attention, so he broke it again after it had mended. That's something to do with outward psychology. If you are not a naive materialist, you can do things and affect the so-called physical body, because the physical body is an energy and you have taken away the first veil. Can we say in this room there is nobody that believes in the naive matter that cannot be influenced by consciousness, feeling, will? For economy's sake, let the ones who believe in naive matter put a hand up. No hand. Haven't got any old 19th century diehards here. Not tonight. So that's veil one. Veil one is that consciousness has actually been tricked into believing that matter is an irreducible, non-energic, non-kinetic dust. The Persian word in the religion of Zarathustra, Ahriman, A-H-R-I-M-A-N. Ahriman means the principle of atomism, the principle of particularity, the principle of grains of sand. And he is the devil. And you know the whole world of matter lies in the grip of the devil. That is to say, if you believe in naive matter, you paralyze your will, destroy your possibility of nice things like faith healing and so on. You destroy your belief in the possibility of influencing anything or anybody. There are no green fingers in a naive materialist. There are no people with gifts of emotional power to make things change and grow. So we'll say we have transcended the naive materialism of Ahriman, the devil. Ahriman means that the thing is broken up into little bits so that you can count all the bits. The R, the absolute, the H, the hierarchy, the R, the discrimination, the I, the individuated point to discover, and the man at the end to count, to evaluate. So if in your relations with people and with yourself, you actually think you could count them up like my friend Greta. Are you a biped? Are you sure? So bad you go upstairs on feet or all fours? And drunk? Are you a quadruped when on all fours?
Not in the normal way of
being. No. About, no. I'm doing an Ahrimanic rundown of you, categorizing you. You've got two legs, two arms, a head, a chest, stump, various organs, one with a steel, stainless steel rod down the back to keep the spine straight. Did you manage to see that lovely thing? Did anybody see that in your life in their hands this week?
No.
So you did not vomit then? Imagine a girl with a slight scoliosis like this decides she'd undergo, for cosmetic reasons, a straightening. You get a straight rod of stainless steel, lie her down on her face, open up the back, chisel out various pieces of spine, put this rod in, tie it in, and then get pieces of stainless steel wire and pull the ribs and pull the vertebra with physical force till they're lined up with the rod. Yeah? And cut pieces of bone and slip them underneath so the ends of the wire, because this is a permanent inbuilt job throughout life. They won't scratch you. So you put bones underneath them, you know. It's going to be a lovely thing. And at the end of it, she's able to do a straight dive into a swimming pool. But could she do a curvy dive like in the old days? Now, what you will bend, it's a flexible rod. And I was thinking to myself, supposing I had a girlfriend that went under this operation, And I felt in an amorous mood, and she said, oh, but my stainless steel rod. I'd feel a bit peculiar, wouldn't you? Well, that would be a sort of ahrimanic operation. And I assume that sometimes she's not stopped growing yet, so part of her will grow and the rod won't, will it? Yeah. Unless it's a magical rod and not a naive material rod. Anyhow, that's just an example of the kind of thing we call it cane raising. You do a categorization in particle terms. Yeah? And you say, I have now analyzed you physically. Two kidneys, one in not bad condition, and so on. And you go all over the organs of the body and write it all down and say, now I know you. And you look like Herbert Lom. If you're old enough to know that series, a gentleman playing the part of an expert medic or something. You are now categorized. I know what you're going to do. I know which bus you'll catch if you ever go in one. I know what will happen to you if you change your mind. There'll be a loud click, 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 click. And I can see the clicking. I can even put a little Ahrimanic device into your nervous system to record the clicks and give me a printout. Today, 516 clicks. I can keep tabs on it if naive materialism is a fact. Now, we don't like it. And we're not having it. So we have got rid of that veil. We now go on to the next veil, ring finger. And that is the feeling, liking, disliking finger, isn't it? You see, aesthetic finger. And that is a terrible veil. Do you know what that one does? It covers everything up with your likes and dislikes. Instead of seeing what that is, you see what you like. And you don't see what you don't like, unless it's pushed under your nose and you are made to see it, and then you don't like it and you deny it. Now, which is the worst veil? Veil one or veil two?
Well, you said the worst thing you could do was believe in the
period of
1970.
Why? The veil one. Yes, has to be veil one. Veil two at least allows you to move a bit and feel that you could influence reality a bit and live a life by like, dislike. But the veil of liking and disliking is still very dangerous. It's the source of all hallucination. Based on I like it and I don't like it. I hope for it and I see it. I fear it and I see it. So veil
it's
two...
Pardon? Isn't it conditioned anyway by veil one?
No. No, that's in the case of the fallen person. Veil one is the last of the veils put on you. It's the first one you have to take off. You've got pure, absolute consciousness at number seven. And that one is a funny one. Even that's a veil. We'll come to that in a moment. The last one is the first, Alpha, Omega, the first and the last. So the emotional veil is very, very dangerous. It's not as bad as veil one, because in veil one you don't have emotions, do you? And you have no freedom, you can't choose. You're just a fortuitous concourse of little sandy particles. And veil two you have to examine very carefully. And for this is dreadful to say, you are not allowed to tell lies. The first one, obviously you're entirely truthful. If you're a naive materialist, everything you say is truly atomic, and atomically true. But we dismiss that one, so now we have this other veil, liking, disliking, and emotion. Now, emotion means a moving outward of feeling. The letter E in emotion means outward and triple, like the triple F. Fourth form function. Because your feeling is your actual real self as a field of influence. Define the word field as a zone of influence of a force, the zone of influence of a force. And the only way you actually know that you exist at all is because of this basic feeling. If you hadn't got this feeling, you could not possibly know that you existed. But if you have this feeling, and every living being has it, then you are in grave danger of liking things and disliking. It's obvious that the feeling level is a paradise of con men, because all they need to do is watch you, see what you like and what you dislike, and then promise you something to get what you like and to avoid what you dislike. And many, many systems of thought have been built up on the like and dislike. But there's a funny thing about it. There is no such thing as a rationally worked out aesthetic theory. The idea of aesthetics worked out, say, by Benedetto Croce or any of the so-called aesthetic philosophers. They cannot come to a rational proof of a feeling fact. Can you imagine it? Can you imagine your feelings being reduced to clear thinking? And when you feel, what do you do? I don't mean touch yourself, that's only a particularization of feeling. And you just feel, well, can you feel your present humidity? Can you feel whether you're dry or damp? Can you feel whether you're relatively at ease or not? And can you give a totally rational explanation of those feelings? No. Impossible. So the veil of feeling, veil two, count from the bottom, is very, very dangerous, because you cannot clearly formulate it, and therefore you cannot rescue yourself from it by reasoning. I do not like thee, Dr. Fell. The reason why I cannot tell, but this I know, and that quite well, I do not like thee, Dr. Fell. Don't ask me for an explanation. So isn't that a dreadful kind of veil? Because unlike the first one, where you, as a naive materialist, you're entirely at the mercy of the atomic movements if they exist. In the feeling level, you're at your position of being your own worst enemy. Your likes, your dislikes lead you by the nose. They trap you, they get you in a mess. And you, by liking and disliking, remember, you are the field. You are that field of influential power. And when you like, you move you. You mobilize. When you mobilize, that is E motion. A triple moving out of I like it and I dislike it. Now isn't that dreadfully dangerous? Because you can say, there's a lady with red hair. That means good at the party, actually, you know. I remember in my late teens, when compiling a list for parties, who's got red hair? That will dynamize the party. True? Is that true, Bob? Well, I still go by that rule when I see it. Sort of Viking heritage, you know, what they did. Long before anybody else in the world was awake, they made longboats and then sailed away and they discovered America and the Pacific Islands and around the world. And they wakened everybody up, you know. And they still do it, disguised as Scottish bankers. I imagine that veil is very dangerous. It needs very careful examination, because you cannot intellectualize it. You can only say, I like and I dislike. You cannot say, why? Because that would be to try to introduce reason into feeling. So how do you get rid of this veil? How do you take this veil off? You have to recognize that liking leads you and disliking repels you. And you have to say, do I prefer freedom or bondage? If freedom, then somehow I've got to control my feeling by feeling. So you take off the veil of feeling by feeling, like taking it off. Can you feel that? Can you feel you got a, have you got a liking, Peter? It leads you a bit by the nose. Do you like freedom or slavery?
Freedom.
Would you do something to get it?
Yes.
Yeah. Like by feeling, control feeling.
Yes.
I'll leave it with you. We can all ask ourselves this one. Can you see how terribly subtle it is? How do you control feeling by feeling? Answer, by feeling like controlling feeling. Now that's obviously an emotive reflexive process. It goes out from you and comes back to you. You feel you're moving, and you with feeling pull back your feeling, because you know perfectly well if you don't, the feeling is leading you. And that energy is you out of control unless you get hold of it. And the word control means with law binding. Come with throw law L binding. Control means with law binding. And the law of feeling is that it always runs towards pleasure away from pain. And if you let it, you can be duped, you can be taken for a ride by anybody, anywhere, anytime, can't you? So that's a very powerful, very dangerous veil, and there's no cure for it but the feeling of feeling like taking the feeling off and standing still in the middle of the feeling so that you're not emoting. Is that harder than the other one? I don't think so. Getting rid of your initial materialism is the hardest, because self-defense is basic. So then you start on the third veil. The third veil is time. The third veil is all that you've ever learned about time events, and which you believe in because you have experienced them in time. Now, how many of us can say, I've had an awful lot of experience in time, but it doesn't condition me at all? Yes? Agua. Does it sound like water? Does it taste like it? If you allow your past experiences recorded in your memory of time events to condition you, veil three has got you under its spell. Unless you break the temporal memory, you cannot be a free initiating being. I just had a flash picture at that moment of a beautiful girl called Ida. 1929. Now Ida was brought up in a French convent. And what does that prove about her? She had magnificent eyes, black hair, and trained in a convent. What was she like?
Dying to get out.
So the boys used to say, here we go, bring up Ida. She'd bring her whole convent training with her. Now, I could do you a drawing of her, you know, she's so clear in my mind. And that's time. And that would be determining me if I let it. And you know what I'd do? I'd leave here immediately. I'd forget that she's probably 70 now. I'd go and ring her up. I happen to know that she's still alive. What about veil three? Isn't it weird? Every time you've ever experienced anything in time and believed it and allowed it because of your belief to condition your present act, third veil is on you. Now take off that third veil. You've taken off one, two, three. Veil four. Now veil four is the universal principle of truth. Apart from the ladies, is there anybody here that believes in universal truth? I don't put this to ladies, but gentlemen, I ask you, do you believe in universal truths of mathematics and geometry and logic? Yes? Can you sincerely say, I believe, and the shortest distance on a plane surface between two points is a straight line. Is that right?
Yes.
The boys laugh, yes, won't they?
Yes.
Will the girls?
Yes.
You twister. You deliberately had to mislead me, aren't you? Well, I'm going to ask you something. Could there possibly be in existence a straight line as I've just defined it? That is, on a plane surface, two points with a line between them. Other than in your imagination. Are we not actually on a globe that's spinning very fast, orbiting around the sun, which is orbiting around another star? Is it possible for us to have a straight line in existence?
No.
No. But we can have one in the intellect, can't we? But what have we got in the intellect apart from a tautology? It's not existential. But in the male brain, there is a genuine belief that a principle is a principle. And it must be obeyed. Principles are for obeying. And diplomacy goes out of the window if you allow that one, doesn't it? You must state the fact. The South African problem, apartheid, and so on. Tell the truth. The earth is God's footstool, the earth belongs to nobody, Africa belongs to nobody, and it's to the ones who fight to take possession of it, to take possession of it if they can. And that's fighting talk, a bit like Terre Blanche. And he would say, and I'll grind you down to the level of the gravel if you oppose me. Right? So what about this? Remember, it tyrannizes over the male brain. If there's a lady here with a male brain, she's got veiled forearm. Greta tried to mislead me into pretending she had. But she had a twinkle in the eye. And she was saying that for fun. Was it for fun, Greta?
Sort of.
Sort of, that's it. Now, a male wouldn't say that. He'd say, no, it was not for fun. It's serious. But Greta knows it's for fun. So that's a terrible veil, isn't it? Veil four. The veil that makes males believe that there is a thing called true logical, mathematical, geometrical form, and it must be obeyed. Do you like it? Anyhow, it's a veil, but don't worry, girls. Let the men worry about that one. You're not in danger from it. But to the male, it is very, very dangerous, because he can actually believe in a weird, what is it, substance, quiddity or whatever, a weird something called fair play. Never kick a man when he's down, said the man who was down. Do you know, it's dishonorable to bash a man when he's defenseless. If you beat him in knightly fight, swinging your mace and knock him on the ground, you can kill him, okay. But fair play, allow him 10 seconds to gather his soul together to prepare it to go to its maker. All right? Can you imagine a girl doing that? I once saw two drunk ladies fighting, scratching. And I said, oh, girls, please, play fair. That was in a wonderful place called the Slip Inn in Manchester. Where actors, beginners, entertainers used to go there to have their auditions. And there was this lovely fine, said, oh, ladies, please, fair play. Do you know they did not stop? They didn't stop scratching eyes, pulling hair, and removing underwear. You think not? I'd say they tuned their ears out against someone. So, that's dangerous for the male brain, not dangerous for the woman. How terrible. The three lower veils are dangerous for the woman, but the fourth one is dangerous to the male, and to any woman who thinks she's a male through careless analysis. Now we come to veil five. On the thumb, please. Remember, veil 4 is on your index finger, the finger of intellect. Veil 5 is the will. As a matter of fact, I had a phone call today, and it's from a lady. And she said, anything I do is pure willfulness. I come from a willful family. She really meant she did what she wanted to. But she called it willful. Now, the way we define will is a non-conditioned act of initiative. It must have no conditions, either physical, emotional, mentational, conceptual. No conditions. Pure initiative. You start something and you have no ground whatever to start it other than this power of initiative, of doing something with no reasons, no stimuli, nothing. You do it exactly after the wonderful mystery called the will. St. Augustine knew quite a bit about that. And some of the best philosophers, like Heraclitus, knew about it. That the will operates from within itself and has no reason but itself. But could that not be a veil where if you identify with your arbitrary power of interfering with things without a reason, it might cover you up with your own will? Might you not identify yourself as a being of initiative and go around interfering with everything deliberately to exhibit your initiative? Give orders, change it. You know the general rule in the business when he gets a new hand in, new broom sweeps clean. He comes in and he changes all the office routine to prove he exists as a new man. And that's a veil of initiative. You wouldn't think that initiative could veil consciousness, would you? But it can. Because you can conceive yourself as a being self-qualified, self-entitled to interfere with everything and everyone. And that can make you fail to go any higher. Now, in the middle of your palm, number 6, the veil of personal consciousness. Now, what is personal consciousness like? It's not consciousness of the body, of emotion, of historical time records, of universal logical concepts, of volitional intent to interfere. But it feels like a person, like a being in its own right, conscious. And it has an identity. There's Deb, she has an identity. There's Peter, an identity. Chappy over here, nice looking boy, got an identity. Yes? You identify yourself with this consciousness separate from the consciousness of other beings. So you veil yourself with your own intent to be a unique person. How do you like that one for a veil? Isn't that a very powerful one? Don't you actually tend to think, I'm myself? Or as the Rastafarian would say, I and I. If I were talking to Goethe, I would say, Goethe is an I to Goethe, and I'm an I to I. So I and I. Instead of myself, yourself, I and I. And really, it's a very high level, isn't it? Personal consciousness, which separates you from the infinite field of consciousness. If we said this is the Atman of Hindu philosophy, this idea that this self is not identical with all other selves and is unique and valid in itself for itself, how does that feel? Valid in itself for itself. As a mere fact of consciousness, differentiated from other consciousness by nothing except the will to be a free person, not merged with other persons. That's a fairly tough veil, isn't it? But there's still another one above it. The veil of consciousness, universal. Beyond the personal, there is a universal consciousness which veils everything by projecting the universe as its own object, universal consciousness. Now, if we said Brahman for the universal, that's the seventh level, it transcends the Atman of the personalized individual, not the jiva related to the physical body, the personal consciousness beyond all finite matter, emotion, time records, logic, will, beyond that. And then, mysteriously, beyond the personal, there's another one that transcends the personal. If we use para for beyond, P-A-R-A, para, we could call it, if we wish, the parontic, beyond the idea of being, the parontic. What kind of a consciousness is that? The consciousness that there is a consciousness transcending the other six levels. Can you get hold of it? Is it very tenuous? But it's there, is it not? But why do we call it a veil?
All these veils seem to be a building up one on top of the other, hiding.
And put them as concentric spheres, will you? With the physical one on the outside.
Yes.
And the other one on the inside.
But it almost looks as if this one is then on the outside and then pulls it inside out.
Mm-hmm.
So that the inside comes to the outside.
Yes, when you're having trouble with your veils. No, see, it's concentric circles. Let the outermost one be your physical body. And we tend, through materialism, to think that it's the innermost, don't we? I'm inside my universe. There's a lot of people out there, don't we say? That's not true. That's the opposite of the truth. Everything, including all you, and for each one of you, me, they're inside consciousness. Yeah? My outermost is my physical body. And my other veils are progressively in. Obviously, the first one, physical body, veil. Second, the emotive. Where are the emotions? Outside or inside us?
Inside.
Where are our memories of time experiences?
Inside.
Where is our logic? Where is our initiating will? Where is our personal consciousness? Inside. And that's why Jesus says the kingdom of heaven is within. The ignorant say, lo here and lo there. Look for the kingdom of heaven outside, somewhere in Avalon. A land to the west, far away. Do you know where it was? Avalon. Do you know you can go to Avalon even today by car? Anglesey. There were men that believed that Anglesey was paradise. And they used to go there to meet druids and chat up druids to get information about heaven. Well, okay. There's no aberration that you can think of that somebody hasn't pre-thought it for you. The fact that you can think about it shows that you are an inheritor, that you've got ancestors. And what you think is your thinking is the memory of their experiences. Now let's look at this consciousness of the universe as a veil. Why is it a veil?
I'm not clear what you mean by veil.
Veil. Well, write E-V-I-L. Yeah. And you don't have to read it in the order given to you in time, do you? Look at the letters and tell me, it means veil.
Sure, yes.
And evil is what? Anti-live.
Yes.
It's live written backwards. Right? Anything that stops you living adequately is a veil.
And what are you?
What, which you are you talking about?
The you that either is or is not living adequately.
Well now, all right, wait. Y-O-U. Translate that triplicity of letters into three Hebrew letters. What are they? What's the O in the Hebrew? L-M-N-O, what is it? Lamed Mem Nun, what? Samach. It's an S. Translate that over as S. Yeah? And put U. What have you written now? Do you recognize the name?
A bit, yes.
A bit, yes. It occurs in Japanese mythology. It occurs in India. Those three letters are very important. I, Samach is the name, potential. Potential, power, drive. That's what you are. That's what you means. It has no other meaning than this. An individuated, yes, power, drive. That's you.
And any existence
really
interferes with that?
No, any veil. It's only a veil if you identify it falsely. If I know that the physical body...
Yeah, but how can this you that you have defined falsely identify something? Or is that a different you that does the false identity?
Well, it finally posits itself, doesn't it? In the Rastafarian I. This funny little animal, have you seen it with frontal gaze going... In the jungles, in the Far East, it's called an I. Very charming little fella. Big round eyes. I. You see, the one that is reflecting on itself as the cause of its own veiling. Everything you put on you, if you know you put it on, and that you put it on, it has no reality of the new putting it on. It's not a veil. And if you put it on, then think, what a charming fellow in this red coat. And you forget you made the coat. You put it on. Then it's a veil. But the same thing that is a veil to an unaware person is not a veil to one who knows he put it there. It's called a revelation. A revelation. The book of Revelation in the New Testament is the most difficult book in the Bible. That's why it's called Revelation. It means one veil on top of another veil on top of another veil. Seven veils. Now why do we say that the top one is a veil? Simply for this. It's an abstraction. It has to know that all the other seven are projected by it. It's forgotten them. And dissociated from them. So it's veiling itself from itself by abstracting itself from its own concreteness. Can you see that? So that's a veil. Now if you get rid of all those seven veils, what have you got? You've got an absolutely unconditioned ego. A power that always, when it operates, operates individually. An operation is a work, and a work is an individuated act. Yeah? And it does it, and knows that it does it, and it's not an abstraction, it's concrete. You tend to think that your body, well, you leave it to death, won't you? You think you will? Well, how did it get where it is now? You projected it from your ego, from your individuating power drive. You projected you, and you impose on you. With every act you did, you imposed. And when you forgot it, it was a veil. And the thing that's ineffective is said to be of no avail. Now when you say of no avail, you know what you mean, non-effective, don't you?
Yeah.
If you try to pull somebody else's leg and get them to believe in a story that you're telling formally, and you veil them, then they are trapped. And if you tell them a good story with the right delivery, the right emotion, and they believe you, they are veiled. And if you fail to convince them, that's of no avail. Now everyone who is identified with any veil needfully, because they are veiled, defend their veils. And to do that, they have to fight all the other veils. You know, there's a thing called racism in this country and in the world generally. And that racism is accepting and affirming veils. Black skin, brown skin, yellow skin, white skin, pink skin, red skin, and so on. All these are veiled, deliberately identified with, to further the purpose of a veiled consciousness. Unveiled is interesting. Now, if you see through all these veils and practice, you become an utterly non-conditioned ego. You know, when it says in the book, there is none more excellent name than this. It means it. Tell me if you could think of a higher thing than this. For there to be a sentient power, totally intelligent, makes no mistakes. Everything it posits, it fulfills. Every goal it sets, it attains. Can you imagine a higher being? Could there be one? Could there be a being higher in terms of power, effectivity, than one that no other being could defeat when he posited reality? Posits a universe. Could there be a being? The battle of the magicians in fairy stories is about the battle of veiled beings trying to impose veils on other beings. I disguise myself as a rabbit, you become a fox and chase me. I become a badger and turn around and bite the fox. The fox becomes an eagle and flies away and comes back and pecks me. I hide as a little louse somewhere in the head where the eagle can't get at it. Talons are too big, beak is the wrong shape. I can veil myself in multitudes of ways, and this is called the battle of the magicians. Now believe that in the world of business, every businessman is veiling the intention of his own business against other businesses, otherwise he's going to fail. And the same in matters called love affairs. That's in the popular sense, because love as we define it is power working from the development of the potentialities of being. Now that one is not veiling anything. But the one that says, I love you, I love ice cream, I love riding in the country, that one is not love at all. That one is desire, and very veiled, because it's conditioned by the body state, by emotion, by history, by logic of some order, by willfulness, by personal consciousness. How do we feel about that high state of being, where we have no identity, and yet other people think we have? We are not duped. What colour is my shirt, can you tell? Grey? Okay, I'll accept it. I think it's a bit on the lilac grey side. I don't mind. I assume you have a meaning for the word, and you can have it. You know why? You know why I let you have it? Because I can't stop you. There is no way that I can get at the centre of your being and influence you. Contrary to you, everyone is an ego. And can, by becoming conscious of ego, isometrics. Yeah? Isn't that the way you put your elbows inside your chair and press the chair arms out surreptitiously and do your exercises without anybody noticing? That's isometrics, isn't it? Isn't that ISO in isometric? The same thing. It means you working on you to develop you. And the you is ISO. Metric, measuring himself, but not duped Now, can anybody frighten you if you know that you're an ego? No. Can they dupe you? No. Can they sell you a commodity you don't need or want? No. Can you actually appear to be sold to and acquire a quid pro quo? If you're an ego, you can do anything. Is that clear? Fairly.
Well, the origin of this messianic stage.
Pardon?
Is the origin of this the messianic stage?
No, the origin of the messianic stage is ego. Because the messiah means taken out of the water. But the ego posited the water and then dived into it. You know, water is a symbol of the psychic energy, feeling life. You know, you have what are called three ordeals or three trials. One is trial by fire, one by water, and one by air. Now, trial by fire is quite simply your daily experience of your encounter with other people in the scramble for dominion. You fight with energy, that's fire, to establish you in the midst of a lot of other beings trying to establish them. Now, if you let their definition of your situation triumph over your definition, you fail your fire trial. If you've got enough energy to know that it's only a problem of energy, if I make my mind up, nobody's going to unmake it, because I know they're trying to unmake it deliberately by imposing energy on me. Mm-hmm. Apparently solid ice is now liquid. Shortly some come out through my pores like an atmosphere. Now, after the trial by fire, that is your daily encounter with other energetic beings in the battle of life, if you pass that one, there's another one. Trial by water. That's the one they call baptism in the New Testament. Baptism, immersion in water. What it means is immersing yourself in feelings and emotion and stabilizing your emotion by an emotional act of emotion. To gain emotional stability, you then go out again, this time, same people, but now you're not thinking about in the red, in the black, fighting for material survival in the world. You're not thinking about the energy fight. You're thinking about emotional stability of you and other beings. And their emotions are trying to unseat your emotions. You know, the other day, somebody said to me about a certain composer. Wasn't that brilliant? I said, I thought it was rubbish. And he said, you don't mean that. I said, oh, good. I'd hate to mean that. It's quite good. Who was it? Mahler. Song of the Earth. Why did he say it was rubbish? He said it was that damn female voice. It was totally unsuited and ruined the whole record. It should never have made that record. It's a disgrace to Mahler. Oh, well, that's okay. Mahler is okay. And the emotional attitude with most people, you hear them enthused. And if it's a pure exercise in self-emotive stabilization, you emotively disagree with that. You're experimenting. What you're trying to do is find out what your emotional reaction is when you contradict the emotional reaction of another person and they react against you and call you a half-wit. And are you injured for being a half-wit? Well, not if you know that you triggered the whole thing as an experiment. Now, if you come through all these emotive tests with the emotions of other people, not the energy ambitions of other people, emotions. Do you like Bach? or is it worse than its bite? You know, you can be flippant, you can be rude, you can be, what is it, blasphemous, sacrilegious. I love Mozart, do you? Are you on guard?
Yes.
And when you do this emotional self-stabilization, you deliberately query other people's validity of their emotions. The fellow there, Trevor Smith, physically very strong, physical culture expert for years. How many years were you teaching, Trevor?
33.
Apparently that's crucifixion year. Mm-hmm. Now you should be able to accept at 33 giving it up.
Yes.
Don't conceive yourself anymore as a physical expert. Conceive yourself as crucified on your 33 years experience. And now you're not going to do any more physical work demonstrating how clever you are physically, but you're going to become very wise, like the crucified Messiah. And you're going to dish orders out to young boys and say, look, you've got the physical strength and the capacity to do this job, but you don't know how to do it, and I do. I'm the wise guy, the one on the cross. And you're too young yet, you're not crossed. Your bones and your joints don't creak like mine. Now, how do you feel, Trevor?
Sounds very interesting.
Could I have said it in another way emotionally? Could I have said, hey, Trevor, you know, 33 years you've been as daft as Muhammad Ali, aren't you? It's about time you got McGuigan. Now, how do you feel then?
I feel pleased that I pushed myself as far as it was possible to go in the field that I was in.
Okay.
I can speak with
authority. Yes, speak with authority, the voice of the Logos. You so see.
That's how I know what you're saying, makes
sense. Okay. And when we relate to other people who don't know these secret rules and the veilings, we wish to develop our own self and remove our own veils. And we can't do it if we behave like civilized, polite beings. How are you? Very well, thank you. Nice day. That's testing nobody, is it?
No.
How are you? Terrible, the humidity. You know what I feel like? A slug. You don't believe me? Throw me a bit of lettuce. Yeah? This way you get an emotive response out of the other person, don't you? And then you can watch your reaction if their reaction is bad. Oh, good. If it's bad, you think, have I gone too far? If it's good, you think, I was a bit clever there. You're on the way to satanic pride. Now, when you've got through your water test like that, which you do by emotively producing non-civilized, non-routine emotional responses. You get through that, you're then emotionally self-stabilizing in the presence of other people's lack of emotional stability. I remember once in a cinema, and the screen got on fire on the right side. In fact, everybody jumped out and rushed for the exit. I was with a friend of mine, and I said, sit down, we'll walk over the bodies later. And we sat there, and the exit there and there, blocked like mad. And some brilliant wit came along and put the fire out on the screen. And the manager said, all is well, the show will carry on. There were two people there, so we didn't mind that. Now, how did they feel when they ran out because of that fire? They should have felt pretty lousy. Because were they considering the others that couldn't get out because of the blockage? No. They would have been quite happy to walk over the prone bodies, if necessary. Now that's that emotional stability. And you do it by mental rehearsal, by creative imagination of dangerous situations. you familiarize yourself with them, and you try them out on everybody you know, even including people you don't know. Stop them in the street. Then, do you know that the colour of your shoes are definitely out? 3 months, 3 months out of date. What will they do? Well, you have to be ready, don't you? And you know, when you get around a house that's like that, you put your arm up and block it. A bit of mental rehearsal you can do. And then you come to the air trial. You think the fire trial is hard, you think the emotion stability water trial is hard, wait till you come to the air one. Now the air trial, you know, air relates to your intellect. You should begin to feel pretty clever by now, shouldn't you? And what you have to do is discard absolutely every intellectual directed concept you've got. If you allow any idea whatever to condition you, you fail that test. But if you take any intellectual governmental proposition and disregard it straight away, you have then gone into the highest non-identified condition, and you are then absolutely self-determined. Not relatively, absolutely. Nothing determines you. Ideas don't, emotional states don't, the fight for existence in time doesn't. How is that? If you get through it, how do you feel? I can say truthfully, all the things I have said tonight, to me, are 100% biffle truth. Now, everything I've said tonight is true. I know it is absolutely biffle. What do I mean by the piffle bit? No, I mean that you invented it. I mean that every one of you who agrees with any of you, or any of the propositions, is self-imposing. How do you feel about that? That's the piffle bit. That the whole universe, called Maya, illusion, is an introjection in an infinite field of consciousness of a universe which has no validity whatever other than the will to posit it. It's absolutely self-determined. How do you like it? Can you be predictive? Can anybody predict you? No. Somebody once said to Jesus, what day is the last day, please? You want to get ready? And he replied, no one knows that, not even the Son of God. The Father has kept that one for himself. Absolute self-determination, free self-determination, absolute unpredictability. Why? Because if there is a condition, it's that that posits a condition. Do you like it?
Point of existence then is just to go through all these fails
mm-hmm.
to get to that point of saying
positive
and you don't even know what it is.
You don't know what it is until you posit it. One thing I decided to do is psych writing. And I write a title on the top of the page and then a word comes. You know, I do not know beforehand what the title is. I don't know what the first word is. Until I write it, I don't know what the second word is. I don't know what the third word is. And if I tried to anticipate what's the next line, I've interfered with it.
I'm absolutely sure that there's not something that's hidden in the recesses from, I don't know, from the beginning of time.
Tell me. He said, how can you be absolutely sure? Do you mean Peter Lallana or Ezo?
Ezo
is always absolutely sure. It's an individual potential driving power. Absolutely self-determined, it must be sure. Whatever is there, it posited it.
Does he have any base?
When you want a base for, you lazy, fearful creature. A base, what's that for? Going home to at night. When you want a base for?
It's a totally unconditioned.
Right.
Totally unconditional, with no memory.
No base.
No base.
It's baseless.
What about money? Well, so it's like, what does it ground it
from? You're back again. You said ground. You're back to base. You're looking for security.
Is that then non-existence?
There's yes. Absolutely. But existence is contained within its concrete self. But itself is not existent. Existent means outstanding. Now, does infinity stand out? Or is that which stands out finite?
Yeah, that's finite.
Okay? So it's non-existent. But it is more real than anything. Remember King Midas saying to Silenus, what's the best thing for me? And he said, best would be that you had never come to be. But now that you come to be, soon as to die is best. Now Silenus is alive and drunk in the forest, holding a bunch of grapes, and rushing about, followed by very charming fat ladies, satirical ladies. He was enjoying himself, but he didn't exist. You know why? Because he was not identified with existence. It's the identification that veils, isn't it? Baseless. Doesn't base mean inferior, horrible?
We are, though, aren't we? I mean, we are material.
You crashed down to veil one now. You are material. And like the baseless fabric of this vision, leave not a rack behind. You know what a rack is? A bit of seaweed. Imagine.
Does that mean we're living in imagination now?
Oh, good. We're waking up. But the imagination is you imagining your world as you would like it to be.
What about the way that it is?
What do you mean the way it is? There isn't any is other than ego posits what is. What is in your mind is a based, grounded, self-defensive mental process. You're frightened of losing something.
Not frightened.
You are, you're terrified. No. You only want to understand to remove the fear. You know that? If you're fearless, you don't need to understand anything. That might be a man's head. Excuse me, sir. Did you feel it? I did. Unprovoked attack. I don't act by provocation. I've got to suffer the comeback, have I? Maybe not. I can dodge. Shankara was a very great mind, and he said, look, you are only veiled and trapped if you forget that you invented the veil.
By dodging the condition.
I'm not. By dodging, I'm unconditioned. It's the conditions I dodge. Your brain is so tied up with self-protection. That's a routine process. Very human. Human, all too human to nature. You keep thinking defensively. And you keep saying you want to understand. And you don't know that what you want to understand for is to protect yourself. To stop yourself being hurt. And to gain what will please you.
Yeah, a sense of security.
You call it security. Now we've said enough about veils for the moment. You can meditate upon them and decide what are your own personal chief veils. We've already eliminated, I think, justly, veil number one. We're not intimidated by that one, are we?